top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die, only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
He's real.
Downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 292, Madman.
Madman from 1981. That's kind of funny because a few weeks ago we podcasted Uninvited and you said there were many films with that title, right?
Yes.
At least eight, right? Madman is such a generic title, especially for a horror film. You would assume that there's a plethora of films with that title, but really, I did doing my crack research on IMDb, my cursory glance, there's only one other film entitled Madman, but it's not part of the horror genre. So this is really the one and only Madman, and this is the Ballad of Madman Mars. Good old Madman Mars. And I was wondering if you could maybe sing a
no,
bar or two.
I can't, but I confess I was listening to it at work today while I was firing off a super hot copy as a journalist. I wish I was back in the day when I had the typewriter and you could just go click, 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 and then got hot copy to file. I'm filing copy.
I keep thinking you're saying hot coffee for something.
Yeah. Well, I filed a lot of that too.
Yeah.
But Madman, another one that's poster that has a poster that precedes it, just an iconic image and a film that in many ways has been lost to the dustbin of history, revitalized a little bit through the likes of Arrow.
Well, and Vinegar Syndrome. This is actually the second week in a row that we've podcasted on that Vinegar Syndrome. Lovingly restored, as they say, on Blu-ray. Uninvited was released by Vinegar Syndrome, and Madman was as well. So let's be honest here. I mean, this is a film that came out in the wake of Friday the 13th and basically copies that template wholesale. It's such a shaggy dog, Friday the 13th. And it's not perfect. It's cheesy. It's goofy. But you know what? Neither was the first Friday the 13th. That had a share of moments that were maybe a little bit less than stellar. So you kind of got to love this film for what it is. And it starts off with a phenomenal title sequence right off the bat with this great squealing synth. As soon as the madman hits the screen, you get this and this great synth score.
And this wonderful bichromatic animation. Just so cool. Red and black.
Yep.
Just filling the screen. Man, I was in heaven.
And then we find ourselves in North Sea Cottages, a special retreat for gifted children. Now, I'm thinking, what gifted? Is this like Professor Xavier's school for gifted mutants or whatever? Mm-hmm. Like, what gifts do they have? Because
finally, a comic book reference I understand.
Because not one child really showed any behavior above
very average.
Above average. The only thing that seemed kind of peculiar to me was that this camp was taking place in the dead of winter. And obviously, I think that was done for budgetary reasons. They probably could only get the camp in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. So
Well, yeah, I mean, par for the course in this subgenre of film is that it's a summer getaway and camp counselors and body hijinks and bikinis, and that's body with a W, of course, mm-hmm. and well, jumping into the water in the
ways,
buff.
Right?
Yeah, it can.
Body with an O, a D-Y, and as well as body with an A-W-D-Y.
And I was thinking that's sort of, if you want to keep subdividing and subdividing and get granular with horror, it's we're working in a genre here, sub-sub-sub-genre that's not particularly overflowing with quality, shall we say. The summer camp horror genre, maybe Sleepaway Camp, and maybe one of the Fridays, The Burning.
I mean,
and then a bunch of just pure dreck. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I guess the jury's out as to what camp you will slot this one into. I'm quite fond of it, but yeah, this is just following the template. And
following the template almost to a T. And
yeah.
As the film begins, we get another one of the staples of the genre, and that's the campfire.
Mm-hmm.
And the regaling of the tale of the killer around the campfire. And we got this in Friday the 13th Part 2
yeah.
to great effect when they took that as an opportunity to fill a lot of screen time by showing clips from the first movie. Now, in this one, it's kind of a neat bit of foreshadowing because as you have this character by the name of T.P. Now,
toilet
I don't know,
paper.
Who yeah. the hell would want to go through life with the nickname T.P.? Maybe his name is Tony Perkins. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't
yeah.
but, you know, obviously, when you hear T.P., you're going to think of toilet paper.
But it wasn't alluded to that the campers bestowed this nickname on him by, let's say, TPing his whatever his
no,
cabin. It was just
TP.
That, TP you can't go through life like that.
Paul Fish, aka Paul Nunziato, who was the one who sang a couple songs on the soundtrack, including the wonderful ballad of Madman Mars,
which
yeah.
I alluded
to earlier in the show. And the honor is bestowed upon him as being the second hammiest actor in the entire cast.
Yeah.
The hammiest, of course, being the camp director Max, played by the wonderful Paul Ehlers. He's
now,
just got some choice lines and some incredible line rings. The way he says, "and maybe play some cards." It's like it's worthy of the Bard. It's worthy of John Gilligan.
The campfire conceit is great. As if you've ever gone camping, like I find that particularly arresting, because you're sitting there with your back to the wilderness. I've only camped in Ontario, so it's pretty sparse. It's pretty dense,
well, you could
thick
sit with your,
woods.
The other way around with your front to the wilderness if you so choose. But
I suppose so.
I guess the
but
wilderness is surrounding you. So
yeah,
no matter
you're engulfed by sheer blackness, which is something you really come to appreciate when you're in the city.
You're sitting there in the midst of the wilderness. Yep.
Yeah, in the city you can barely see a star half the time. Mm-hmm. And then you're out in the bush. And then when you're given this like wonderful tale to digest, and it's a doozy. I mean, it's the Cropsey legend, which is... What is it? There's a doc based on Cropsey. I think it's called The Killer Legend.
It's called Cropsey.
Okay, there's another one called Killer Legends and Cropsey.
Cropsey
features.
Being a very famous urban legend from upstate New York, actually Buffalo, I believe.
That's what I thought, but I also heard Staten Island, and it has something to do with a killer with a hook for a hand, of course.
And of course.
It was stashing bodies beneath a tuberculosis mental hospital for children. I don't know, but
course,
it's a great legend.
The Cropsey legend being the influence for The Burning. So
yeah, and I don't even know if we should podcast to the extent this one divulges from The Burning. You have the same source material, really.
Well, this
both
one,
based on
this
urban legends of some type,
doesn't
and the scraping
really,
of the hand.
One thing about The Burning is it showed us the origin of the killer and how he sort of became what he became. Whereas in this one, they just sort of tell it through the medium of song, which I love, and through tale. As I said before, Max, as hammy as he is, and by the way, the producers wanted to get good old Vincent Price for the role.
I read that.
And,
I wasn't sure. I didn't. I was not able to source that beyond one blog. So
it makes me think because I really really love the actor who plays. Did they mention Paul Ehlers earlier?
Yes, he did. Yeah,
that's my mistake. He's the one that actually played Madman Mars.
Uh-huh, okay.
I really love the actor who plays. The director, his name is eluding me at the moment, but when he's telling his tale and he's to these poor kids and he's like, I hope you enjoy my little story. It's terrifying. He's telling
this
god awful tale of a homicidal maniac to like people, like kids from the age of like 8 to 12, right before bedtime.
I'm laughing at Vincent Price. I can't imagine a guy as sophisticated and debonair and urbane.
Mm-hmm.
Urbane is derived from urban, obviously. A guy that He just, I can't imagine him with an ascot within a suit with a pipe hanging out in the woods. But that would have been some casting. Like, that would have been fine.
You know what? VP would have done, man. Everything, he was up for any challenge, and that this one would have been great too. But we get a good substitute in his place.
Yeah, and this stuff, I was totally on board with that. If you play the game
with a fair heart, you can always look at yourself in the mirror. He's just got these lines and the way he reads them. It's like he's auditioning for King Lear. It's amazing.
Jeez, I thought you were going to break out into The Gambler. If you know how to play the Game Boy, you know, you got to learn to play it right. God, but yeah, this is just a... It's funny, you alluded to the gifted children. The children in this movie are so inconsequential until the end. None of them is hunted down. They just are basically shunted away in their cabin, and they're not developed.
Well, they're there to basically whine and go, "I'm so scared."
Yeah, you know, but, yeah, very briefly.
And for the counselors to sort of offer them some succor, and as you said before, shunt them away. And it's the counselors who are the ones that are being terrorized, and that's par for the course for the genre.
Well, when you compare like Jason Alexander
in The Burning, yes, the
getting prophylactics and having all these fun lines. These kids.
But they were older in The Burning as well.
So. I guess, yeah. So I said this is a subgenre, the camp counselor, homicidal maniac genre of Lost in the Woods. I would throw in also, well, exploitation when you find out the big reveal of who the killer is. But I think this has more in common with some of the regional horrors that we podcasted. I don't know if this qualifies. The New York state, a region, very low budget. I was thinking Unhinged, which we podcasted, where it's sort of...
All the Un-movies start to blur after a while, so you're going to have to just give me a quick reminder about Unhinged.
Unhinged, where you have the girls who get into a car accident, and then they recuperate in this off-the-beaten-path homestead overseen by some matriarch, and they can't leave even though there's a gas station a mile away.
Yeah,
and then maybe
one.
Nightmare and a Damaged Brain, that kind of the sensibility of being no budget and just a bunch of maverick indie people taking on this kind of movie. Like Joe Giannone, the director, hasn't done anything since. I couldn't even Google him despite the unique spelling of his Italian surname. I was like, what else has this fellow done? He's from Staten Island, influenced by the Cropsey, but I would have thought this would have spurred further development. But, you know, especially this did fairly well. 200,000, 300,000 as a budget, grossed a couple million. Released in the slasher boom, why not? But sadly, nothing, you know, didn't hear from him again.
Well, the impetus for the story here is you have this this ne'er-do-well counselor by the name of Richie, and as soon as he hears, because you can't utter Madman Marr's name but above a whisper.
It's like Macbeth, except it's really shitty.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, he's the one full of bravado and full of I don't even want to, piss and vinegar.
Pith and vinegar.
And as soon as he hears that, he goes, "Madman Marr, come and get me." And he throws a rock, and with great accuracy and fortuitousness, he throws it through Madman Mars's cabin. And then he goes out in the woods searching for Mr. Mars, and he's never really to be seen from again until the end of the movie. Meanwhile, other counselors are going out one at a time looking for poor Richie, and they're never coming back because they're the victims of Mr. Mars. Who, by the way, cuts a dashing figure. I mean, he looks incredible in this movie. One thing you got to give this props to this movie is the design of Madman Marr. How would you describe his
face? I was going to say Lord of the Rings crossed with the...
kind of looks like the biker. Interceptor in Mad Max.
Ooh, okay. You know, I was going to say one of the bikers in Sons of Anarchy had this kind of look. Well, any biker with a giant beard and giant hair.
Is this this massive albino dude with like a big beard?
A little bit of Jerry Garcia style.
Yeah, definitely there, although I couldn't see him break out a rendition of Truckin' at any moment. But.
I just thought, when you have this conceit where they're supposedly out in the wilderness, and then you throw a rock, and I don't know whether this guy has an arm like Tom Brady or whatever, but 50 feet away, let's say, and a structure that you should be able to see by candle, by firelight, whatever, flashlight, and... It was really a very funny, again, Shaggy Dog afterthought. I don't know whose idea that was to stick the domicile of the killer right beside the campsite, but it slightly took away from the proceedings, shall we say.
Well, there were a lot of things that took away from the proceedings. I mean, how about the scene where TP and his girlfriend Betsy, who Both of them were very important figures in the film. I think Betsy, I think more than anybody, had a bit of a tryst in the hot tub, and they spend about 5 minutes swirling around each other.
With no nudity to be had.
No nudity whatsoever, but they're literally just like kind of like making circles around that. I don't know what they're trying to do. It's
like, like the courtship of dolphins. I don't know what was. I was looking for some nudity. And
you're always looking for nudity, Chris.
I am. I've been up for it since I delved into the genre when I was 11, 12.
Oh, and you're up for it, yes.
We had a kill count, we had a boob count, and these usually were, the ledger sheet was filled out quite amply, no pun intended, by the likes of Friday the 13th, constantly. This one was very chaste and showed a level of restraint that I wish I could around Thanksgiving, but absolutely, like, no, very little gore, with the exception of a few killings. Nothing in the way of nudity, no hijinks to speak of.
If I'm not mistaken, this one did not make the Video Nasty list, did it?
No, but it was pulled off shelves in the UK for another reason. I think it was unfairly lumped in, but it was not. And I got to say, I mean, there may be more, say, more violent or less violent Video Nasties that made that the cut.
Yeah. I would say Driller Killer being one of them.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, so we'll talk about the kills. So, I mean, there was a lot of blunt force trauma. a little bit of bloodletting here and there.
Well, the foreshadowing from the campfire, I think they did mention that the killer would, he was hung by the townsfolk. I'm thinking of that Fulci movie now where they, with poor Feig, he was killed by the townsfolk as well.
The Beyond.
The Beyond. Yeah. He was strung up in a tree, and I believe someone swung an axe at him. So I'm like,
well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure, why not? And then he survived the blow. It might have been to his torso. Needless to say, he came back. And if I'm not mistaken, he has backstory that involved murdering his family and living out in the woods in this ramshackle abode.
Yeah, so, which is very similar to Jason and the early Friday the 13th.
Indeed. So what I really appreciated, though, beyond the odd axe assault, because he is the quintessential urban legend killer, he's an axe murderer, so fine. But I really appreciated how one of the victim's deaths toward the end was rather drawn out and protracted, and a little bit of a nod to maybe having made her the final girl. So I don't know whether they were just trying to pad the runtime. This is only 88 minutes.
Well, this
there's
is
a lot, long stretches of...
Oh my God, so much walk time and search time and stalk time and cower time and, you know, I mean... I got to admit, I mean, I did fast forward through that, but I had judicious use of the fast forward button as I was watching it. I mean, this is my third viewing anyway, but there was definitely a lot of padding, for sure.
There was one character...
More padding than the mattress I sleep on.
Yes.
Night,
you
know? There was... You could use a bit more padding, to be honest with you, but it's kind of threadbare at the moment.
Well... use padding because what, you have back problems? Certainly not from the number of ladies he brought over of late.
Chris,
I was thinking there's also one,
deserve that.
One of the counselors was one of the more academic types and one of the more loquacious and erudite fellows, and he goes on this 5-minute spiel about like this epistemology of what, who can determine who's mad and how do you know what someone else is thinking, like a theory of mind shit. And then he pulls out a switchblade and says, I could kill you all right now. And I don't know if that was supposed to be a red herring, but I never believed he would be the killer
This film had less red herrings than any local fish market, which there's no red herrings. We knew right from the start who the killer was.
I got to admit, I spent part of yesterday evening watching videos of the Seaview Sanitarium and watching drone videos going over top. And I highly recommend, if you haven't seen the decaying structure on which the Cropsey legend is based, it's quite interesting. Although videos of people busting into places they shouldn't be and poking flashlights, I don't know, it's a little odd, but it's a great setting and a great backstory for the killer, who apparently had a hook for a hand and would stash the bodies of children under the structure. So you have these enterprising urban explorers going there, and I thought that was pretty interesting. Like, I like the backstory here.
Well, I mean, I don't know, for me this movie, it's not, I really separated from the Cropsey legend much more so than I would The Burning, which was much more directly influenced by Cropsey. I mean, you can't say that every time you have a killer in the woods, it's based upon the Cropsey legend. I mean...
No, especially since that was urban, too, or to the extent that Staten Island is urban, even though there's woods there. But maybe this is more in keeping with... I don't even know. Like, this has some similarities to maybe Hayride or... What's that other one? Wrong Turn, maybe? Of someone dwelling in the woods who's kind of mad, and then if people come upon him through various means in those films. Mm-hmm. I believe there's a car breaking down. But still, there's only so much you can really do with a madman lurking in the woods. And it's hard to judge this because at the time, this would not have been the trope that it later became. And some people have said that this is the kind of thing Scream would have made fun of, but... At the time, I mean, 1981, were there really that many wilderness horror movies? They came after, like, Sleepaway Camp Massacre, or no, Cheerleader Camp Massacre, or I don't know what, one of these, but Don't Go in the Woods, maybe, which we podcasted.
In 81, this was still, this was fresh. I mean, you know, there was a voracious appetite for anything semi-related to Friday the 13th, so this might have been the second or third film to come out in the wake of that one. That sort of, and as I said before, this is a very Shaggy Dog Friday the 13th. This is taking that movie, and if that movie is, I'm trying to make some analogy here, like some highfalutin, I don't know, give me like some painting that's like...
The Death of Marat?
Okay, and then this one would be,
this one would be Dogs Piss Christ? Sure.
But which is not to say that Dogs Playing Poker is bad. It's fun, no. It's amusing, it gives you a little chuckle.
If you have a man cave and you're lucky enough to have a billiards table, you got to have Dogs Playing Pool.
Or yeah, you're not going to have the other one you mentioned.
Yes. But, I was thinking, to the extent we can judge this against its contemporaries and its subgenre, like, I don't know whether... different movies come with different expectations. Like, there's an expectation, to use a sports analogy, that the New England Patriots football team wins and the Cleveland Browns football team always loses. It's just there's a set of quality expectations that come from having the likes of maybe Miramax pushing you in the case of The Burning, and the fact that this is a nondescript effort here.
Nascent Miramax, so at that point.
I guess so, but there's really no backing
that
here.
That was Harvey Weinstein when he had no clout to expose himself to anybody, so...
Yes, yeah. Yeah, it's a good thing that the exposer was exposed. If there's a pretty good documentary on Netflix talking about his hijinks. I've often wondered what the other, this is an aside, Weinstein brother... thinks. Like, he's sort of is he alive? Is he under the radar? What's he up to?
He's sort of under the radar.
Okay.
Yeah. I guess so. Actually, the other Weinstein brother was the one that was more involved in The Burning than Harvey was. So.
Uh-huh. But, again, that is probably a superior effort just by virtue of the fact that the kills are so extreme and I guess the camp counselors are more developed, has a little more humor, but they pair well favorably as a kind of a twin viewing. I think Sleepaway Camp is probably the standout in this genre, and maybe Friday the 13th 3.
Sleepaway Camp, I think, is a bit of an outlier only because of the whom the killer is and the twist at the end. I mean, it's, you don't have this big hulking figure lurking in the woods, offing teens. This is a little bit different. So Sleepaway Camp... Yeah, it's similar in the sense of the setting, that it's a summer sleepaway camp. Other than that, I think it is a bit different in terms. I don't want to go into it. I don't want to spoil Sleepaway Camp, but just the virtue of who is doing the killings makes Sleepaway Camp a bit of an outlier in terms of this subgenre.
True. At least to the extent The Burning and Mad Men both make use of incredible silhouetted figures in the woods.
It's a great silhouette. I mean, one thing about Madman Mars, and I love the alliteration, is that he's so hulking, he's so massive, and when they show him and he's kind of lit from behind and he's holding a guy up above his head and it looks like he's about to give him like a Bane, like just like a Batman, like take him and break him across his knee. Unfortunately, he didn't do it. I would have loved to have seen that happen, but
I thought you were going to go with the Undertaker tombstone maneuver or some sort of... What's the one Bautista does? I don't know. I'm not up with my wrestling anymore. But yeah, that was amazing. I mean, also the fact that there was a kind of a supernatural element to this one, and the killer was clearly not wholly human. So he had these scaly, almost reptilian appendages. So that was kind of a unique little twist. I don't know if this is the point in the podcast where we segue into what we've learned here.
Sure.
Well, again, the camp campers are just nondescript, almost afterthought throwaways.
No, to be honest with you, they really didn't need the campers. This could have been a bunch of students getting together who worked at a camp in the summer, getting together winter break to kind of maybe
at the cottage
clean the cabins or whatever, and get yeah. I know it's
oh my
far
god,
from summer,
I want to break into song here. Fall break is a, you know, the
Mutilator.
Excellent movie, The Mutilator, one of my all time favorites, that has. Again, a winter setting where there's a cabin, a cottage by the waterfront, and one of the impetus for them going there is they have to ready it for the winter. So I guess make sure it's all cleaned up and winter-proofed and all that stuff. So yeah, fall break. But yeah, I didn't even think that this is the winter.
This is the game with the tagline of, you always make fun of the tagline of The Mutilator. It's like by hook and by
hooks. Hook and by, but never by outboard motor, which is one of the weapons. Yeah, by
one
hook,
of the greatest weapons in horror history in terms of using for a killing implement. But
well, this one has a great reveal. Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen this because there's the car trouble is so ubiquitous in horror film. It's always it never starts. I mean, you know, AAA has got to be going crazy with this. Start the engine, never goes. But under the hood, there's a pretty amazing reveal later on, which I thought was very funny. And if I'm not mistaken, I guess we're going to have to spoil it, but one of the counselors wraps up the body part in question after taking it off the radiator or whatever he does, and I think tosses it into the woods because you can't just drive off with somebody's noggin under the hood. Like it's not good for a road stop. But I thought that was very funny. There's a few little very interesting
in the carpool lane, possibly.
Yeah, exactly.
Pop it up on the dashboard. You know?
Oh my god. This is a game effort. I mean, there's no names.
It's not a game changer, but it's a game effort.
No, I was thinking too. I think one of the final girls was in Dawn of the Dead. I didn't really recognize her though, but I was thinking horror is the only genre, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I would say the only genre that requires zero star power. Because if you name a drama or a comedy that has zero stars in it, like you'd be hard pressed. Any of the great comedies of all time, the likes of your Manhattan or Throw in Anchorman or Groundhog Day or one of these, Spinal Tap, all these amazing figures, Woody Allen, Christopher Guest, Bill Murray, all these people, Will Ferrell, you look to them and go, oh, that's them. Horror can succeed or die
because
with nobody
you're not
in
saying
it.
That's them. You're saying, oh, that's that. You know,
that's
the
that
genre.
Yeah.
There's a certain set of expectation, a certain set of tropes. Hopefully, maybe those will be subverted, but that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, and so, who needs like Gregory Peck in The Omen, or who needs Jack Nicholson in The Shining? Nobody really.
We don't need them, but I'm glad that they're in those movies. They do elevate the movies.
I guess, but I'm sure that The Shining could have been good with some nobody as well. Like,
page Stephen Weber about that. When Mick Garris did the Stephen King approved, Jack Torrance was played by Stephen Weber, and frankly, I just saw Dr. Sleep, and they recreated scenes from The Shining, using other actors, and they had some nobody playing Jack Torrance, and although he was channeling Jack Nicholson, but the specter of Nicholson's performance, no pun intended, because some people do think that
he's an illusion,
this looms so large that it was very distracting. I think, I don't know. I mean, maybe you don't need them, but it is good to have star quality in horror films.
I guess. I guess to the extent that it really matters. It really
Mia Farrow and Rosemary's Baby or...
Yeah, I suppose. But then there's, for all those, there's at least, you know, 1,000 examples of your Texas Chainsaw and your Burning with a bunch of nobodies. Yeah. So, but that's what makes it so great.
Most
like
of the time,
people deride horror for... people think that it's easy to scare people. It really isn't. Maybe in a theater, if you just have them with jumpstart them with Pavlovian buzzers and synths and booms and shouts and screams, but it's highly underappreciated.
Or if you're William Castle and you're putting actual joy buzzers inside the scenes, God bless that man.
Yeah, exactly. The Tingler is such a fun one. I actually read about it 20 years ahead of actually seeing it. But yeah, I think that. You know, no star power here, no wattage whatsoever, no star power in the director's seat. There's another thing I learned is, you alluded to the hilarious song. it's not often that you have a, you know, a song about the antagonist, so it was very funny, and I wish I could hum a few bars, but it's left the memory banks.
Well, it was almost like a today. Bit of a sea shanty, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you learn?
Well, it's not so much what I learned. I mean, I, you know, watching this movie, my brain was set on neutral, so I didn't really learn that much, but... you know, I enjoyed the film. I mean, once again, I mean, it is a very watered down version of Friday the 13th, and but there's a real sort of can-do-ness to it, and there's a real charm amongst the principals. And even though, and some of it really made no sense. Like, for example, the fate of Richie. He goes in the woods. Nobody sees him. People are looking for him. They get off as a result.
And, he emerges ashen-faced at the end.
At the very end of the movie. Yeah. And we don't know why. What did he see? What happened? Obviously, there was some sort of altercation with Madman Mars. Why
they'll come back standing? With a sequel, and he'll be the killer. Well, actually, I believe it was Bloody Disgusting that said there was an updating of this in the works, but that was from 2018. I've heard nothing since.
So. There was an updating of Maniac in the works that Joe Spinell was trying to get off the ground for years and years and years. It doesn't happen.
I was going to say that this has zero. How should I put this? This has no redeeming qualities, but not in a bad way. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't aim to change the way you believe in anything. It's not groundbreaking. It's not overly ambitious. It is what it is.
It is what it is, yeah.
They have some pretty good knife photography.
It's like a Molson Canadian of horror flick, or for our American listeners, Budweiser.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's
not great, it's not bad, but it's
palatable. Like satiating a hunger when you're on the road. And ordinarily, you wouldn't want to stop at an Arby's, but you're really hungry, and then you stop there, and Arby's. It's delicious.
They got me in the mood for roast beef.
Oh, my God.
Pseudo roast beef, obviously. But.
Yeah, exactly. So, star rating.
Yeah, I mean, this is your variable definition of a 3-star movie. It, like I said, or like you said, it doesn't break any ground whatsoever, but it doesn't bore. It entertains, and it introduces us to a killer that maybe did not become, you know, one of the upper echelon killers of the genre, but
it's slightly above the don't go in the woods guy.
Yeah, I mean, there's something about the hulking figure of Madman Mars and that albino face of his. It really sort of leaves a bit of an indelible impression. And once again, I love the alliteration. I love the fact that it's Mars with a Z.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, 3 stars for me all the way.
My podiatrist is a Mars as well, which is weird. I guess it's a first
Any
name.
Relation?
Hopefully not. It'll lop off my lower extremities like a, what's his name? Procrustes. Yeah, like Mars.
You're actually the only person I know that actually goes to see a podiatrist. I hope your feet are okay.
I have flat feet, but thanks for asking. Okay. I have orthotic insoles, which make me half an inch taller.
I scratch that. My ex-wife's a podiatrist as well. So, if it makes you feel any better, one of my legs is longer than the other.
So. Oh, likewise. So yeah. Maybe you know, I wouldn't need an Apple box a la Tom Cruise if I were to star in any movie. But and speaking of stars, star rating here, I'm going to concur. This is the quintessential 3-star movie, because this is why we have a 5-star rating system. If we had 4, this would be unfairly given a 2, which is a passing grade, or not even, depending on where you go to university. But this is a 3. This is a B-, C+, whatever effort. It's fun. It's 88 lean minutes, which is good, apart from a few stretches of sheer inactivity. And people calling out into the wilderness.
If you watch my version, it's about 52 minutes long, with my use of the fast-forward button.
There is... a surfeit of calling out into the darkness of people's names, and sure, but really that's par for the course. It's dark. It's the wilderness.
It's kind of funny because, I mean, you're looking for somebody, so obviously you're going to call their name up. At the same time, you know there is a madman on the loose, and you want to remain sort of inconspicuous. So calling out the name, it's a bit of a
funny. You should mention that,
really,
because killers have a supernatural ability to be everywhere and be omniscient and omnipresent and all that good stuff. I've often thought, if I'm being hunted by the likes of Mr. Voorhees, I would just turn off my flashlight, go somewhere, and just quietly brush some leaves over myself and just wait till dawn and then get out of there. But no one does. They just keep their flashlights on and they dutifully go in pursuit of their friends. And really, you should all split up. Yeah. No one ever does. And in this movie alludes to it too, where they say, shouldn't we stick together? Maybe, you know, and then.
You think that they should split up?
I think. Yeah, I think, because then they can, the killer has a harder time of it. If you go all in a line, then, I mean.
Yeah, but then it's like five against one. If the killer comes upon you, so.
That's the, you know, it's like the. Tastes great, less filling of.
And
a
then the thing is, you split up. Okay, so you're split up. Like, let's say you're splitting up to go find TP, and then one person finds him, and then you got to find four other people. You know.
Hopefully, you're never lost in the woods looking for TP, because that's scary.
You well, there's a plethora of leaves you can use instead. So.
Oh my God! On that, you know. High note. We're going to end the show here, and yeah, 3-star for me. This is like incredibly fun. You know, lags at times, but hell, so does our podcast. But okay, not really. 3-star, not a wholehearted endorsement, but one of the better, and this is as backhanded as you can get, one of the better camp counselor maniac on the loose movies out there, of which there are at least 30 to 40.
But certainly not the best.
No. So. And we shall talk to you soon.
Take care. Thank you.